Welcome to Awakening Calls. Every Saturday, we host conversations with guest speakers from all walks of life. Speakers whose personal journeys awaken and inspire our innate spirit of service. Thank you for coming together to plant seeds for a more compassionate society.
I found a short Yelp review online that I think is a beautiful introduction to the kind of person and teacher that Chase is. And it's a short one, and it starts out, Chase is a patient, grounded instructor in the tradition of T. Krishnamacharya. If you like hardcore bending and sweating, this is not the yoga class for you. Here it's all about the breath. It takes a while to get used to, going at your own pace, following your breath, rather than an instructor telling you when to breathe and bend. But Chase's class was a refreshing change for me, getting back to what yoga meant when I started, following my breath, and treating yoga as a part of my life rather than a break from it. With that, I welcome you, Chase. It is a privilege to have you with us this morning. Thank you so much for making the time.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really pleased to be here. Thank you. Before we get started, I would like to do a little invocation. It just acknowledges that even the possibility of this call today is only possible because of the work of those who came before us, and that something is being passed down over many, many generations, and that we are just a chain. We're just one link in the chain. So I'd just like to begin our talk with a little invocation. Shri Krishna Vagishayati Svadabhyam Samprapta Chakrankarna Bhashya Sadam Shri Nuit Narengendra Yatau Samarpitasvam Shri Krishna Maryam Guru Varyamide Virodhe kartike maase shatatara krito dayam yoga charyam krishna maryam guru varyamaham bhaje shri gurubhyo nama.
Thank you for that. Chase,
I was going to say, thank you so much for having me. It's lovely. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, the feeling is definitely mutual. As a start, we have so many places to go with this interview and this time, and I think just as a start, we'll maybe begin in once upon a time fashion and have you do a flashback. And just looking back at your journey, and you know, if you could give us a glimpse into the road that led you to the chapter in your life, you know, or the book of yoga in your life, and the influences or the states of mine that you were in that maybe led you there.
Sure. So I was born at an early age. And I was born on the West Coast. I grew up in Seattle, and I am a West Coast boy. And when I went to college, my parents really encouraged me to go out east. So I went to a small liberal arts college in upstate New York. And it was a very interesting experience, but I have to say at the same time, a very difficult experience. I just never felt like I really hit my stride. And in fact, university really cracked me open. Who am I? What am I doing on the planet? What is the meaning of life? How is it that I came to be here? You know, is this all there is? All of these things really came to a fore for me in university. And I wouldn't say that I was very well equipped to answer these questions. So I became a philosophy major. I got really into it. But somehow, most of the, I would say the non-religious Western philosophy, it's all very descriptive. Here's what the world is. Here's how it's structured. And essentially, this is why you're screwed. End of the book. I thought, wait, what do I do with this? This is not helping. So I got there at the university. There was a couple of Eastern philosophy courses. I took a course on Buddhist philosophy, and I thought that was very interesting, very, very interesting. And then I decided to study abroad, and there was a study abroad program to India. And so just by dumb luck, I went on the study abroad program, and I was promised before going that I would be able to study some Eastern philosophy, specifically Indian philosophy and Hindu religion. And so when I got there, one of the courses was yoga theory, and it was taught by Mr. Deshikachar. And so twice a week, this very diminutive, very slight, small Indian man would come in and just blow my mind by his descriptions of, okay, here's how the world operates. Here's how you are related to it. Here is the structure of your human system. You know, these beautiful descriptions that really felt very, very, felt like coming home. It felt very consistent, very common sense. It's not really asking to make big leaps of faith. It's all stuff that you can test out and experiment with in your life on a daily basis. And really, the kicker for me was it was not only a descriptive side, like here's who you are and what the world is, but there was this beautiful prescriptive element. Breathe like this. Link with these things. Don't link with those things. Pay attention to what your actions are. Ask yourself the question, why am I doing this? You know, it had not only the descriptive element, but it had this really broad prescriptive element. Everything from breathing to movement to attention to diet to lifestyle to relationships to spirituality. I was hooked. I was like, whoa, all right, here we go.
And so I summed that. Did you have any? But you said in a beautiful way that it felt like a coming home. So was it easy to kind of drop the Western framework and to just, did it feel natural, or was there a process of kind of navigating that, or did it just
really?
I would say
that's still an ongoing process. I went to India, and really I became so enthusiastic, and I came back. I had one semester left at college. I finished that. I went straight back to India. I spent 6 months there studying with Mr. Deshikachar and at the Krishnamacharya Yoga Mandiram, which is essentially a clinic where they use yoga for to help people heal physical, mental, emotional issues. And I came back, and I looked my dad in the eye, and I just couldn't quite tell him, I'm going to be a yoga teacher. I just couldn't quite say thank you for the college education and, you know, all of our family values of business and this and that. And I'm going to be a yoga teacher. So, you know, I looked him in the eye and I said, I'm going to get a PhD in Indian philosophy, which is pretty much the equivalent in his eyes of, I'm going to be a yoga teacher. But at least it was hidden. It was garbed in the, in, you know, advanced degree kind of. And it's taken me a really long time. It took me a full 10 years or more than that, 14 years to become a yoga teacher from when I first got it. Introduced to Mr. Deshikachar, to the time when I really, that's all I did was teach yoga. And I think that the process of teaching has really accelerated the change of perspective. Because, you know, when you wrestle with how do you communicate what is being presented, then you start to really see all kinds of examples in your own life, and just an exchange with my wife, or, you know, standing in the line at the grocery store or something like that becomes an example. And then it really is something, a process that accelerates.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for sharing that. And I know in this tradition that the teacher-student relationship is really important, and it, you know, you've had an extraordinary teacher. And I was wondering, since some of our callers may not be particularly familiar with Deshikachar or his lineage, if you could speak a little bit to that. Bless you.
Sure. Thank you. So, Mr. TKV Deshikachar was the second son of Sri T. Krishnamacharya. And Krishnamacharya was born into a family of religious scholars. One of his ancestors was a very influential reformer of religion in the 19th century named Natha Muni. And the religious institution that he helped form is called Sri Vaishnava, the Sri Vaishnava tradition. Krishnamacharya's grandfather and his great-great-grandfather were both essentially the pope of that institution. And so Krishnamacharya was born into a family with a deep tradition of learning and of religious practice and whatnot. And Krishnamacharya spent a great deal of his life studying, including traveling to Nepal and Tibet, where he spent 7 years with his yoga teacher, living with him. Essentially in a cave, living with him and his family, and as part of the family. And then when Krishnamacharya left his teacher in India, the tradition of payment for studies happens at the end of studies. It's called a Guru Dakshin. And at the end of the studies, the teacher names what the price of the studies will be. And when Krishnamacharya was leaving, his teacher, Rama Mohan Brahmacharya, he said, "Please be a yoga teacher and please get married and have a family." Huh. So Krishnamacharya, who was, you know, part of this religious institution in which both his grandfather, his great-grandfather and his great-great-grandfather had been renunciants and led this religious group, he became a family man. And he had six kids, and he taught yoga his whole life. And a lot of the yoga that has come down to us in the West has been inspired by Krishnamacharya, or can really trace its roots to Krishnamacharya. So things like vinyasa, flow, Ashtanga yoga. Sri Pattabhi Joyce was a longtime student of Sri Krishnacharya's. Mr. Iyengar was Krishnacharya's brother-in-law. And then you get people like A.G. Mohan and Mr. T.K.V. Deshikachar, Indra Devi, who have all studied with him and really brought yoga into the West. So although many things have changed and morphed over the years, et cetera, a lot of what's here in terms of yoga in the West can be traced back to to Sri Krishnacharya. And then Mr. Deshikachar, who was really not interested in yoga at all in his youth. In fact, he studied to be a structural engineer. He was valedictorian in his class. And after he graduated from university and he was on his way to a job in Gujarat, he came home to what was then Madras and now is Chennai, and was just staying with his family for a couple of weeks before he started the job. And there's this story where Mr. Deshikachar was sitting on the porch and up pulled a car, and out of it came a foreign lady, a woman from New Zealand. And she was saying, "Professor, professor." And to which Sri Krishnacharya came out, and she ran up and gave him a big hug. And Mr. Deshikachar, who had never even seen his parents hug, was shocked. So afterwards, he said to his father, he said, "Father, what was that?" And Sri Krishnacharya said, "You know, this woman has slept for the first time in 20 years without pills. And she's very excited, and she's come to thank me for that." And so Mr. Deshikachar got interested and declined the job in Gujarat and took a job in Chennai and started studying with his father, and ended up living and studying with his father for the last 30 years of Sri Krishnacharya's life. So Mr. Deshikachar really became a vessel for a huge amount of Krishnacharya's teachings. And it's a broad, broad range of things. It's everything from, you know, asana, which the body positions. Everybody, when people think yoga now, they always, you know, very often they think body positions or exercise or sweat or whatnot. But this is actually a very fairly limited tool of the full yoga range of tools. So he taught from asana to pranayama to meditation to chanting to philosophy to daily living to spirituality to diet and lifestyle. I mean, it's a full range of tools. And the thing that I really find amazing about, and I continue to marvel at it more than 20 years later, is that it all fits together as a coherent structure. It's not yogic breathing and Buddhist meditation and this or that therapy. It's really the breath and the body and the mind and emotions and life and spirituality, they all fit together as a single whole. And it's like a ball of string. When you pull one string, all the other strings also come. It's very, it's a beautiful structure and very powerful in terms of transforming our perspective.
Thank you. That, quite a rich introduction there. And I'd like to go back at some point to that relationship with Deshikachar, but I think at this point it would be wonderful because of the problem of language is that, you know, there are so many interpretations for each word, and I would love for our listeners and for myself to just understand when you use the word yoga, in this tradition. What does that contain for you? What does that mean?
Oh, the rest of the call will now be on yoga. You know, I think this is a really super, super interesting question. So, you know, the root of the word yoga is yuj in Sanskrit, yuj. And yuj means to yoke. And a yoke is like, it's something that you use to help you direct the movement of something which you would otherwise not be able to direct. In other words, a yoke is an implement of influence, or you can use the word control, but it's a little strong. But so in other words, a yoke is something that we put on a horse or an oxen or whatever that allows us to direct the movement of the oxen. So, but then, you know, when you look at yoga, you get all of these different ideas. Yoga is equanimity. Yoga is skill in action. Yoga is that which separates us from our union with suffering. These are all from Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. Yoga is directing the mind in a chosen direction. That's Yoga Sutra. Yoga is a protection. Yoga is a tool. It helps you to do what you could not do otherwise. Yoga is meditation. Yoga is conscious linking. Yoga is skill in action. These are all from Amarakosha. So I think when you ask this question, like, how do you find yoga? Imagine that you're trying to communicate to someone who's never been in love, never had the experience of parental love, never had the experience of romantic love, never been a parent themselves. So, you know, how do you talk about that to someone who's never had that experience? Well, you can start to explain some of the aspects of it. You know, you can say love is feeling nourished or feeling attended to, or, you know, love is when you would willingly give your own life for the life of your child, or love is a sensation that arises in this or that part of the body, etc. So, but none of those are all pointers. They're pointing to something which is not in the language. It's an experience that really can't quite be captured by the word love. And I think we have the same dynamic going on with yoga. Yoga is something that is an experience. It's something that you have to experience to be able to know what it is. So over time, there's been so many different definitions of the word yoga, but really they're talking about a process by which our system, our body, our breath, our mind, emotions, etc., comes back towards a state of balance. And as it comes back towards a state of balance, various symptoms are there. The mind becomes directable. The breath becomes long and smooth. There's feelings of peace and of joy. Because the mind is directable, because there's not anxiety or anger or these kinds of things, then my capacity to respond to situations in front of me improves, and gets the skill at which that I can run my life or interact with other people's or things increases a lot. So, you know, yoga is really a set of techniques that influence the way our system functions. And we have to have an understanding of, well, how is it that the system can function? And what is our goal? And then based on that, we can apply techniques to change the way it's functioning or to influence it. And as we become more and more skilled at bringing the whole system back towards balance, then all kinds of different areas of our system, of our human system, change, and that affects every part of our life. So when you ask this question, like, you know, what is the meaning of yoga? Yeah, this is a really interesting question. And you can access it at so many different points, because when you really practice yoga, it changes everything in your life. So do you want to access it at the body or at the mind or in relationships or spirit? These are all legitimate starting points. So
powerful. I mean, that is that's a pretty electrifying elevator pitch for yoga and so much more than that. And it's a great segue into having you maybe talk a little bit, because I understand the Panchamaya system is a very kind of foundational piece in the work that you do.
Yes.
And perhaps you could break that down for us a little bit, unpack that.
Super. Sure. So, you know, you asked this question a few moments ago about how long did it take me to really accept yoga perspective, a yoga viewpoint. And I answered, it's an ongoing project. You know, the main topic in yoga is perception, experience. How is it that I am experiencing my life? And it then looks and it says, okay, well, all of life is being mediated through the lens of my body and my mind. So whatever is happening in my body and my mind is going to be influencing my experience of my life. If I'm really nervous about something that's coming up next week, it's going to be a little bit affecting the conversation I'm having with my wife, or the work that I'm doing, or how I'm driving my car. You know, if you've ever had a loved one that's been having a health situation, you know, like Pavi, as you've been explaining, that health situation affects us. And then the rest of our life is at least a little bit impacted, you know? So yoga looks at that and it says, okay, so what is this lens through which all of my experience is mediated? And we can say, from a yoga perspective, and the model is taken from the Taittiriya Upanishad, it's called the Panchamaya. So the lens has five different dimensions. Pancha, five, Maya means that which is all pervading. So five different dimensions. They are body, breath, mind, personality, and emotions. And moreover, it says that all five of these things are interconnected, so that when one changes, all the others change as well. In fact, my wife this morning is having some back pain. And the back pain happened yesterday in the afternoon. We were with a friend, and the friend was talking about the death of her mother. And my wife's mother is having some health difficulties. And in the course of the conversation, my wife shifted her back in the chair and bam, tightened up. She had back pain. So you can see, where is this back pain coming from, right? Where is this back pain coming from? Well, really, there's some emotional response. And that emotional response is impacted, is showing up in her back. You know, I could say something like, we could play a word association game. So, you know, if you close your eyes and then I say a word, then what I want you to do is just be observing your breath, right? So, politicians. Or we can play a different game. We say a different word. Taxes. So, did anybody see their breath catch for a moment? Or did anybody see their breath get a little shorter or shallower? Or maybe if you aspire to be a politician, oh, the breath got so long. Something like this. So, you know, from the model of yoga, what we're really seeing is that these things interact. And when I change one level, all the other levels change. And this takes us to the topic of the conversation today, because our breath is so powerful. It's both a barometer of what's happening in our system, as well as a tool by which you can change what's happening in our system. So if we get out of balance, if we get nervous or anxious or sad or angry or, you know, something like that, it will show up in our breath. So by working with the breath, it also has the influence on other things that are happening in our system.
Is this
kind of a long-winded?
Not at all. I was wondering, because I know we talked about maybe giving listeners an experiential kind of understanding of this. Might this be a good place for one of the exercises?
Oh, that would be great. That would be great. Yeah. So that would be great. You know, one of the things that I would like to have happen for this call is for there to be a couple of practical takeaways. So I would say one of the really practical things is that if you observe your breath throughout the day, it gives so much information about how you're doing. Am I relaxed? Am I nervous? Whatnot? You know, Pavi, you started off by saying that you could see in yourself different aspects that are nervous or whatnot, and when you just let that relax, then something really changed and shifted. And breath is such a powerful place to really get information and feedback as to what's happening in my system. Same thing, once you see that, we can change it around. So why don't we have a little bit of a experiment about that? So please sit up with your spine straight. And then just take a moment and watch some of your breathing. How is it? Where is it? And then I'm going to have you repeat after me. I'm going to do a little bit of whispering, and I like you to repeat after me. I am whispering. So just whisper, I am whispering. I am whispering. Then repeat after me. When I whisper, I can feel my throat. When I whisper, I can feel my throat. So whisper that a couple of times. When I whisper, I can feel my throat. On your next breath, I like you to whisper, ah. So whisper, ah. Ah. The mouth will be open. See, how long can you whisper, ah? So take a big inhale and then whisper, ah. Repeat like that. I'm going to give some more instructions, okay? Some more instructions, but repeat like that. Big inhale. Slow exhale. Slow whispered ah. As you do that, so repeating it, that's repeating it. As you do that, see if you can make the whispered ah very quiet and very subtle. So quiet, in fact, that maybe you are the only one that can hear it. You are the only one that can hear it. Nice, slow, subtle, long, whispered ah. We'll do one more thing here. In the middle of your next exhale, so the middle of the next whispered ah, close your mouth, but keep the sound. Close the mouth, but keep the sound. So you're going to start with the mouth open. You're going to whisper, ah. Ah. Then close the mouth in the middle. Just ask yourself, where does the sound move? So when I close my mouth, it might not even be a sound anymore. It might just be a sensation. Where does it move? One more time like that. So this is just a short technique, quick technique, but take a moment, no conscious control of your breath, to see how you feel, or to see how you're breathing now. See if there's some change from 2 minutes ago when we started the breathing. This is really what yoga is about. Yoga is about learning how to manage our system, our human system, our body, our mind, our breath, our behavior, emotions. Learning what kinds of experiences bring me back to balance. What kind of experiences help me to return to equilibrium. And then the quality of my attention, the quality of my presence, my capacity to actually listen will all be so different. They'll be improved. And then the way that I respond to my kids when they're yelling in the car, or the way that I talk to a colleague when they've made a big mistake, or the way that I communicate something very difficult to my loved ones, they'll be different. And this principle applies on the full range of our capacities. So if I'm very ill, if I have some strong pain, then we're doing this essentially the same thing, but we're just using techniques that are modified to meet the capacity of that situation, being in strong pain or being very ill. But as slowly the techniques have an influence on my system and slowly something happens and there's a return towards balance, etc., then we change the techniques because my capacities are changing. So if I have to define what is yoga, you know, for me, I prefer conscious linking, because yoga is about choosing to link to the things that will nourish me or that will bring me back towards balance, and learning to relinquish the things that have the opposite effect, take me out of balance or take me in the wrong direction. And as this happens, then I am really uncovered. And that's a complicated question. Who am I, et cetera. But it really, as this happens, we come back to who we really are. And then the way that we are in the world is so different. I hope that the breathing, at least the breathing exercise, at least gives a small taste of what's possible in that direction.
Speaking for myself, and I'm sure for many of the listeners, it does. And I think it's undeniable. Like, you can feel it in your body, and you can feel that change or that you know, that window kind of opening. But I'm curious about why does this happen? Like, what? And maybe that's not the most important question, but are there explanations for, you know, why breath is such a key piece of this? What is that property, or what is actually happening? I'm sure at the heart of it, it's
beautiful.
It's a law of nature, but. How do you parse
Yeah,
that?
You know, that's so interesting. I just like to point out, and this is one of my favorite things to do when I'm teaching, that before I give the answer, if you're sitting at your desk, pick up something that is light, like an envelope, okay? Or like a pencil or a tack or something like that. Pick it up above your desk and then drop it. Okay? And then release it. Oh, it falls to the desk. Wow, look at that. So then we may ask, why does that happen? And, of course, everybody will say, gravity. Gravity happens. That's why. But actually, gravity is not an explanation. Gravity is a description, right? We can describe what it is that the speed at which two particles of mass are attracted to each other. And we use it to great effect, you know, in our modern life. I mean, this description is so useful. But finally, we don't know why two particles of mass attract each other. We're not able to explain the why there. Right? Why does that happen? No, and, you know, a lot of what we're doing in science is really description. And I would say that yoga is a gorgeous description of how our human system functions. It's a beautiful description. You know, I have a body and it's functioning, but that functioning is related to my breathing. And when I change my breathing, it changes the way my body functions. And I'm thinking, There are some ideas there. And when I have an idea I like, oh, my breath gets a little longer and softer. And when I have an idea I don't like, oh, it gets shorter and sharper, etc. So yoga gives some explanations for why when you change the breath, it has such an impact on the system. But I'm not sure they're really explanations so much as descriptions. So one of the things it says is that there is a vitality, there is a kind of energy which is at the foundation of the way our system is functioning. And this vitality or this energy is called prana. And it's very similar to what in the Chinese tradition is known as qi, and in Japanese is ki, etc. So something like acupuncture, you know, works with this vital energy and the movement of it in our body. So acupuncture is influencing how the energy is moving through the use of pressure or pins. Well, yoga is claiming to be working with the same energy. And its tools are breath and attention. And in fact, the same word that's used for the vital energy is the same word that's used for breathing. You know, at the beginning of our call, there was a beautiful explanation of the Hawaiian prayer and how life, you know, breath is for all of life. The same connection is being drawn here in yoga. Breathing has something to do with vitality. And when you add in presence, when you add in attention and directing of that attention to different parts of the body or different functions of the body or the mind, etc., then you can consciously support the functioning of the vitality. You can consciously support the way that prana is moving in your body. But you know, I mean, to me, this is still a description. I think it's one of those mysteries of life that don't really need to be solved. Oh, I am here. I'm in a body. How did I get here? I don't know. But I am here. And while I'm here, if I breathe like this or I move like that or if I have some attention in these different ways, it can really influence the way that my system is functioning, and that has a huge impact on my experience of the world, and that has a huge impact on my capacity to participate and influence and help and be of service. So it's really yeah, go ahead.
Thank you for that. No, I mean, I think one of my other questions was actually, you know, going to be around prana and how, what is its relationship to the breath. And I think that very naturally came out, and I very much resonate with the descriptions are gorgeous, and, you know, the explanations aren't necessary to receive the benefit. And I think the descriptions also, in some sense, I don't know if this is your experience with it, but with, you know, my limited exposure to the sutras and everything, they're kind of these, you know, they're not like manuals in the way that you would like read a manual to, you know, learn how to fix your car.
Yeah.
But they're these, I don't know, like guideposts or like these signals, these like, you know, lighthouses. They're just these beacons. And you, they give you these,
yeah,
words that you kind of have to, like you were saying in the beginning, you know, if your experience is your deepest teacher.
And, you know, breath is really important in this direction, because if you look at the practice of yoga, its main goal is that the essential you is expressed. The spirit in you has its purpose for being on the planet now in your body gets expressed. So how do we get there? Because most of the time we're so focused on external and, you know, what we would call gross as opposed to subtle things. So what this manual of sutras is giving us is it's giving us a way that we move from the gross to the subtle and from the subtle to the more subtle and from the more subtle to the more subtle. And this process is greatly facilitated by breathing and by breath because let's take, for instance, a forward bend. If I just raise my arms and bend forward and then come back up and lower my arms versus if I begin with the breath and I set the intention that the breath is raising my arms as it goes up and I finish my inhale at the time the arms are up and then I set the intention that my body will float down on the breath as I bend forward. So as I begin my exhale, then I begin to bend forward. I finish the forward movement, the forward bend. I finish the exhale. I pause. I set the intention. Breath will raise me up. So I begin to breathe. Then I begin to rise up on the breath, come all the way up. Then I finish the movement. Then I finish the breath. Now I set the intention, my arms will float down on the breath. I begin exhaling, the arms come down. I finish the arm movement, then I finish my breath. Slowly, what that allows us to do is it allows us to see how the gross, the body, is actually being moved, is being breathed by breath. And that is like going from gross to subtle. And not only that, but it will take us towards equilibrium, towards balance. As we come towards balance, the number of thoughts that I have, the content of thoughts that I have will diminish. So that when I have that internal voice that says, oh, I think you need to call Susan or whoever it is. I think you need to go do this. Or, you know, we become capable of feeling and seeing what our calls are. Oh, I really feel called to homeless, to helping the homeless. Oh, I really feel called to doing what I can about our veterans who are returning. Or, you know, so by moving from the gross to the subtle, it allows us to be in touch with what is our internal voice and how is that? And then when we get in touch with our internal voice, it really opens the possibility that why we're here gets fulfilled. And I think breathing is really key to that because it's constantly bringing us back towards something a little more subtle, a little more subtle, a little more subtle.
Beautiful. Chase, I was wondering if I could break in here because we're entering the top of the hour and I'd like to offer question and answers. Chase will answer your questions and also comments. You can hit *6 on your phone or you can go to ask@servicespace.org and email us.
Sounds good to me.
Chase, on that, continuing sort of with that theme while we wait for questions to come in, I wanted to ask you, since I'm sure many of the people listening probably have some kind of yoga practice of their own or have done a yoga class and probably accessed it through the asana form, what kind of from your approach to yoga, how do you approach the asanas and what might be helpful things that we can, you know, keep in mind if we do happen to be?
Fabulous. Fabulous. I love it. So Patanjali, you know, this comes back to this question that you asked about how do we change from one perspective to another, you know, and really yoga is really about changing our perspective, changing our experience of the world. And, you know, in our Western world, the ideas of health are very closely connected to cardiovascular strain. It's a way that we're told if you exercise that you will be healthy. And exercise is defined as raising the heart rate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Patanjali, in his definition of how to do asana, says sthira and sukha. He says it must be stable, sthira, and it must be comfortable, ease, sukha. And in the yoga perspective, the most important pump of the body is not the heart. The most important pump of the body is the lungs, is the breathing. And Krishnamacharya has been documented on several occasions to be able to stop his own heart through some breathing. In other words, he lay down on a table. He said, "Take my pulse in 20 minutes." And then he did a bunch of breathing, and he'd take the pulse at 20 minutes, and there's no pulse for 2 minutes. And then he would you know, change his breathing and the pulse would come back. So there's a whole perspective shift here. We think in that I'm being healthy by straining my body. We think that we're being healthy by raising the heart rate and whatnot. And Sri Krishnamacharya would say, horses run, people walk. When we do a yoga practice or do an asana practice, according to Sri Krishnamacharya, the heartbeat should not be elevated. So that doesn't mean that it's not intense. It just means that the intensity is coming through breathing and through the lengthening of breath. It's not coming through physical exertion or by making the body fast or exert. So when we think about how to do yoga, I would really encourage people that don't view it as a big workout. Don't view it as exercise. You know, breathing is so closely connected to prana. And when you agitate your breath, it agitates your prana. No, have smooth and have even and have lengthy breath. Then coordinate a movement with that breath. So as your chest expands with the inhale, take the arms out to the side or up above the head. As your chest contracts with the exhale, bend forward. There's a contraction of the chest from the movement. So there's a connection here between movement and breathing. And then slowly the breath can become the touchstone by which my movements, et cetera, happen. But this question is really interesting, Pavi, because it is a very different worldview. And it's not something that is very easy to just turn the corner and you have a different worldview. It's something that takes a little bit of time. And, you know, earlier in the call you had said about one-on-one teaching. It's so important to have an individual teacher who can help you to implement these things on an individual basis. When you go to a group classes are wonderful. I support them. I like them. But if you're going to really do this in a meaningful way, I think it's really important to have individual instruction for somebody who can watch and see and point out what you're doing and make changes, etc.
Chase, this is Kozo. Thank you for that. I'm using your techniques right now because my son has a baseball game that starts at 8:15, and I knew I was going to be on this call, so I prepared all of his stuff, and I had my mom come over to pick him up, and then my wife came out and just started saying, "What are you doing?" You know, so it's kind of messing things up. So I'm sitting here going like, "Hey, I'm on a conference call, you know, with they can hear you." And I found my breath just getting really short, and then so I've just been doing the and then closing my mouth and it made me feel and know it's okay, you know, okay, I got some background noise. I apologize, but life happens, right? It's working right now as we speak, Chase.
All right. I love it. That's so good. I love it. So, Kozo, I want you to know that I didn't even notice. So perhaps nobody else noticed either. So I didn't notice. But also, I also want to say that there's another step here. Okay. So then when you've established that closing the mouth halfway through, and you can find that place in your breath easily with the mouth closed, then it's not necessary to really open the mouth again. You can just keep it closed and have that sensation of where the breath is in your throat or in your back of the nasal passage or whatnot as you go.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, I have a question that I think kind of extends on what you were just speaking about there when you connect with breath, you connect with prana. And then you said this, breath will bring us back up. And you were talking about, you know, doing a forward fold. But I was thinking more in terms of therapeutic yoga. And I'm wondering if that movement into the subtleties of breath and prana can influence the growth in the way that, you know, it can stop heartbeats if you really train it. Have you seen how breath or yoga or, you know, that awareness can alter the growth in the sense of disease, in the sense of, you know, disability, in the sense of all these different gross maladies or, I'm really curious about
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, from our model, from the Taittira Upanishad, we see the human system as having, the material aspect of the human system as having five dimensions. There's a body, the body is breathing, and it's thinking, behaving, and feeling. So, when, you know, these are interconnected. So when one changes, all the others change as well. If I stub my toe, immediately my breath goes, you know, then my mind goes, who the hell put this chair here? And then my behavior changes and, you know, I start yelling or whatever it is. So there's this connection between the way that my body is functioning and the way that I'm breathing, thinking, feeling, etc. So when we're talking about therapeutic application of yoga, you know, we're really looking at, it's not simply that the body is disturbed or that there's some issue with the way that the body is functioning. That is also going to show up in how we're breathing. Typically, it shows up in the way that we think, the content of our minds, or how much attention we have, etc. It also shows up when, you know, moods, that kind of thing. So when somebody comes in with a physical issue, and I deal with people from everything from terminal cancer to fibromyalgia to Parkinson's, to migraines, to, you know, whiplash, to you name it, the yoga has application. Because when you change the way you're breathing, it starts influencing how your body is functioning. It starts influencing how your mind is functioning. And the result of this is it seems so simple. It seems so subtle. It seems almost like impossible. But it's almost daily that somebody that I've seen for a second time or a third time, they say, I can't believe it's the breathing, but I'm feeling so much better. You go, right. So what else have you changed in your life? Nothing. Okay. So how you feel? Oh my, I feel so much better. And, you know, we have really amazing impact, not only on pain, but on digestion and elimination and the way that a woman's cycle functions. The applications and the impact are enormous.
Can you give a specific story of a person who was dealing with a malady and you changed the way that they breathe and the healing that went on there? Is there any examples that bring to your mind?
Sure. Tons of them. Tons and tons of them. So I have a recent example where a young man, he's 33 or 34, came to see me, and he had been dealing with chronic back pain for 3 years. And, he'd been to every conceivable doctor, acupuncture, by the time they get to yoga therapy, very frequently they've seen a whole slew of different people. And nothing had worked. He'd had a procedure on his back, a surgery on his back. It had not worked, et cetera. So he came and we started just doing very, very soft movements coordinated with breath. In other words, the movements were about a half inch in length, he said, "Really, this is it? this is my practice. This is all I'm doing. You don't want me to stretch it out. You don't want me to go forward." And I said, "No, actually, I want just the opposite. I really do not want you to stretch this out. I do not want you to aggravate it or whatnot. I just do this with this breathing. It's so soft." So I saw him a week later, and basically he was so excited he couldn't barely stand. He said, I don't know, but I had the best week I've had in 3 years. And
wow.
I'm not better, but there's still some week to go here. But now there's some moments in my day where I'm not in terrific pain. There's some moments in my day when things are like calm down a bit. And this is basically over a course of 3 months, he came completely out of his back pain and regained his movement. And he still has to be careful, and he's still going to have to do these practices every day to keep things open and loose, etc. But basically there's a huge impact there in recovery of his back. And this is a guy who's been, he's been around trying to get some solutions and whatnot. We could go on and on like this. We have a lot of success also with, let me give you another example. So I have a young lady who's had migraines, and the migraines started in high school and have several per week up through her 30s. And basically a friend told her to come see me because she'd tried everything, et cetera, and given up on things, but she came to see me. And this process of working with breath, you know, when you change your breathing, you really can change the way you feel, and you can really have an impact on the way you feel. You can participate in your mood, or you can participate in your healing. It's no longer that you're at the mercy of it. So this one took about 6 months. But over the course of 6 months, what she learned to do is to identify a pattern of pushing and a pattern of striving. And by identifying this pattern of pushing and striving, then she slowly stopped when she started seeing it happen. And in stopping, when she's seeing, okay, here are my warning signs. Here's how I know that I'm reaching the limit of my capacity. And if I keep going, I can hunker down and push through. But if I hunker down and continue to push through, then I know that I'm going to be paying the price later. So when I say it takes 6 months, this one took 6 months. She's still going to have a few headaches and whatnot, because there's going to be times in her life when she's not going to be able to stop, even though she knows what's happening. She's going to have to push through, et cetera. But by and large, she's been able to reorganize her work schedule and reorganize her living schedule so that she can better support the equanimity or balance. And as she's done that, she's really been able to dramatically reduce the number of headaches that she's having.
Wow. So we got chronic back pain, chronic migraines. Within 6 to 3 months, they were pain-free. That's some powerful testimonial right there. We got a lot of people on the call today, Chase, and I just want to offer, hit *6 if you want to ask a question. I think with that really powerful breathing exercise, you got so many people in a state of equanimity that they're all copacetic right now. They're not.
Well, we can do some more breathing. We can do another breathing exercise. You know, I have a quick question
that did come in on this end. Yeah. A typed in question. From the Bay Area, what advice do you have for people as we get more and more technologically immersed? In particular, the effect of screens, visual stimuli, electrical impulses, repetitive micro movements, etc. How can we better support ourselves proactively and preventively?
Yeah, this is an important question because, you know, Mr. Desha Kachar, Mr. Desha Kachar is now, he is retired because of medical issue, and he is really very, very ill, unfortunately, and he's no longer teaching or available to the general public. But when he was teaching, and he always used to say, well, as yoga therapists, you can thank the computer for all of the work it will be bringing you. Because it's true. It's so true. We have this, these screens, and we sit in front of them. And, you know, for those who are familiar with Ayurveda, screens are so vata aggravating, and vata is related to pain. And, you know, their screens really cause a lot of havoc in our system. But for many people, they're unavoidable. You have to, you know, your entire work day takes place on the screen. And so I would say that it's really worthwhile to take 5 minutes every other hour and do a little bit of breathing and a little bit of movement. And this breathing and movement is a way of participating in the way that your system feels and functions. And it's It's bringing it back towards balance regularly. And, you know, as long as we're in balance, our system is going to function as best it can. If we have some sort of long-standing chronic something, then you know, that's going to impact the overall functioning. But it, when you're in balance, it will function as best as it can. So probably the answer to this question is best a physical, is a short physical practice with breathing. Can I lead a practice now?
Absolutely, yes. Probably, and I think we do have two more questions in the queue that we want to get to, but a practice here would be great.
Okay, so be seated with your spine erect, with your spine straight as possible, and put your palms on your knees, okay, palms on the knees. So take a big inhale, and as you exhale, you're going to whisper, ah, ah. You can do it with your mouth open or with your mouth closed. It's up to you. You're going to whisper, ah, ah. Then another big inhale. So you're going to go at your own pace. On your next exhale, bring the right hand palm to the left shoulder. And then pause for a moment there. As you inhale, bring the hand back to the right knee. Then exhale, the left palm will come to the right shoulder. After you finish your exhale, you're going to pause there for a moment. As you inhale, you'll come back, left hand to the left knee. So go at your own pace, go at your own speed, which is going to be the speed of your breath. Alternate the hands each time, and I'll give some more instructions as you do this, okay? So try to make the movement of the hand, this start and finish time, the same as the breath. So try to coordinate the movement of the hand with the movement of the breath. As you're exhaling, slowly bring the palm to the opposite shoulder. As the hand gets to the other shoulder, you're just finishing your exhale. Pause there for a moment. Then initiating the inhale, initiating the movement, hand comes back to the knee as you're finishing your inhale. Try to make the sound of the whispered ah subtle. Slow the breath down. Very subtle. One more time. So this is something you could do at your desk. You know, there's other arm movements. For instance, as you inhale, you could take the arm from the knee up above the head, arch the back. Exhale, bring the arm back down. Alternate the arms like this. So there's other things you can do at the computer. But if you just take 5 minutes to do a little breathing like this, it has a big impact.
I had no idea we were going to have yoga class on the Awaken call today, but I'm so grateful. It's beautiful, Chase. Thank you. And we have two callers in the queue now. So I'm going to go to our first caller. Hello, welcome to Awaken Calls.
Hi, this is Mary. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Meredith can
hear
you.
Hi. I am actually a student of Chase's, and I don't know if this was brought up earlier, but although this tradition is best experienced in a one-on-one teacher-student relationship, there are a handful of us who teach in this tradition in the Bay Area. And so, Chase, I just was hoping that you would bring that up, that there are classes in the Bay Area that people could experience a taste of this tradition if they are so inclined. And I would also say that I have been a huge beneficiary of working with Chase one-on-one and have had my own long-term injuries basically dissolve in my system through these practices. So I just wanted to add that in.
Wow. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
You know, if you are interested in finding a group class wherever you live, you can email me at thewell@yogawellinstitute.com. And we'll be happy to connect you with a teacher in your area. thewell@yogawellinstitute.com, and we'll be happy to connect you with a teacher. Can also, our lineage is also called Vinni Yoga, V-I-N-I, Vinni Yoga. So you can find some, if you Google Vinni Yoga, you should also be able to find some teachers. Thank you, Mary. Very important.
Sure.
Chase, what was the first part about the? I know it's Yoga Institute, YogaWellInstitute.com, but what was the first part?
The well, THEWELL. So,
okay.
The well, okay. At YogaWellInstitute.com. Yes.
Great. We'll definitely put that on the transcript and on the thank you note. So we'll send that out to everybody so you can have that. We'll go to our next question. Oh, I think this is still Mary, right? Mary?
Yeah, it bounced back to me. Sorry about that.
Okay, I'm going to go to our next caller. Hello?
Yes, hi. Good morning. This is Anne.
Anne Vig?
Yes, Anne Vig. Hi, good morning, Koso.
Morning.
Oh, it's such a joy to be on this call this morning, and I just want to say a profound thank you to Pavi and Chase for this beautiful conversation. And I've been practicing yoga in different traditions of yoga since my 20s. And when I was introduced to Chase I've been studying with Chase for now about almost six months. And it has been just such a profound experience. And for me, that kind of also that sense of coming home of, oh, my gosh, I have been looking for this for many, many, many years. And what I find so beautiful about the practice, just like meditation, is this the opportunity to really to surrender to the breath. And what I'm finding that I've never experienced before in my yoga practice is allowing my body to move, not that I'm controlling it, but from that deep place of listening and allowing the breath to allow my arm or whatever part of my body is moving to move. And just that profound gratitude for being in this body and the subtleties that kind of arise, the information or just, there's just this kind of brightening of inner knowing, and it has been the most beautiful surprise, and I'm just so grateful. So thank you, Chase, and this call has been super, super, super special.
Thank you, Anne. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it. You know,
wow.
I just wanted to say thanks to everybody who has, you know, the opportunity to be on the call here and to share this work from Sri Krishnamacharya and from Mr. Deshikachar. And I do have a small thank you to offer people. I do have a series of three recorded classes on breathing techniques. And if you email me at yogawellinstitute.com and just ask for the link to that, we'd be happy to get you set up and so you can watch those classes. They're, you know, the some of you got a little bit of taste of what we did today, but there's more on those. And just as a thank you that we can share, I have to say that Mr. Deshikachar was so humble, and if you ever met him, you would have no idea that you were talking to one of the most influential and accomplished yogis of the modern era. Just, I mean, you sat next to him on the plane. You would have. You asked him, "What do you do?" He would say, "I'm a consultant." And you would have no idea. You'd just think, "What a nice man! What a nice man!" And he's so humble, and it's such an honor to be able to share that work that he has put out into the world, and to be part of it. And so, just really appreciate the opportunity to share and to do that. So thank you so much for having me on the call, and one that I just really honored. Thank you.
Wow, what a beautiful gift, Chase. Thank you. And sign me up. I definitely want those classes, because just what you taught today has been really helpful for me right now. So we end with one final question. I know we're a little bit over. I hope we're not keeping you from something.
I don't. I'm happy to be here as long as we have questions.
So our question, Chase, is what can we as the service-based community do for you to help you with your work, with what you're trying to accomplish in this world?
That's a beautiful question. Thank you very much. I would say that the thing that really helps the most is just the awareness that yoga is something that's coming from breathing, and that it has this full presentation of the human system, that yoga is actually a meditation tradition with breathing, with body movement, with daily life. And to have that be out there as something that people think about with yoga. Of course, you can find out more about that from my site with the yogawellinstitute.com. You can find out more about that from Krishnamacharya Yoga Mandiram, which is kym.org. You can find out more about that from Vini Yoga, V-I-N-I Yoga. So just really to know that there's a whole presentation here of yoga that involves tailoring techniques to the person, and that can happen in such a deep and profound way. I think that's a huge help for us. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to give thanks to both you and Pavi for this amazing conversation. Pavi and I are, you know, we have a chat on the background, and she said, "Doesn't feel like an accident that you and I are hosting and moderating this call, because we're both dealing with health issues in our sphere." And Chase, this has been a really healing call for me on so many levels, and I really appreciate it. And I know it's extending out to so many others. I mean, the two callers who called in, they didn't really have questions. They just said, you know, basically gratitude. So thank you so much. Pavi, did you have any last words before we do our minute of silence? Javi, are you on mute?
If you don't mind, maybe
I am on mute. Sorry about that. But I was just saying that, no, I do have further questions, but I'm going to be respectful of people's time. And I just wanted to say that there is, there have been so many gems, I think, in this morning's conversation, so many gateways that we can each use, no matter, you know, what path we're on, no matter what our kind of, you know, approach is. I think there was a lot here that is immediately applicable. It's just a gift, you know, to find someone who has studied so deeply in a tradition and who can explain it in ways and make it come alive in ways that are so relevant to, you know, each and every, to everybody's life. And Chase, you have that gift, and you share it with such grace. So our gratitude for that.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for the opportunity to be on. Would you mind if I chanted just to close before we did the minute of silence?
Yeah, let's do a chant, and then we'll follow by a minute of silence. And then what we do at the end of that, Chase, is we unmute everybody, and then we do a big thank you out loud. So we'll start with a chant, then a minute of silence, and then thank you.
Beautiful. It's been such a pleasure to be here. Thank you. Om Asato Ma Sagamaya. Om Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya. Om Mrityorma Amritangamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
Thank you. So I've unmuted everybody. So on the count of three, let's send out our biggest gratitude to Chase and Pavi, and just our breath and our just the wonderfulness of being here today. One, two, three.
Thank you. Namaste.
Deep gratitude to everyone. Deep gratitude.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.